Hey there, this is Heather McAllister, a health coach for women in midlife. I went from feeling fat and tired at 40 to living my best life ever 9 years later. I now feel better than ever in my body and in my clothes. I feel a renewed sense of purpose and energy, and I'm here to share that with you. It was not an easy path. I had a lot of missteps along the way. But all those missteps have made it easier to help women facing the same struggles. So I created the Get Better with Heather podcast to give you simple and effective strategies to do the same thing. So if you're a woman in midlife and you're struggling to feel good in your body, to take off extra weight without obsessing over food, to get motivated and get moving, then this podcast is for you. Hit the subscribe button to stay up to date, and let's get started. Well, hello, my friends. This is Heather McAllister, health and life coach for women looking to lose weight. So one of the biggest issues, and probably the foundation for all weight loss and all problems we have with food and our health in general, is digestion and our gut. And I run into problems with digestion, and I think underlying a lot of illnesses is the problem of gut health. And not only is it gut health, but it really is the whole digestive process. So today I want to dive into what I mean by this and what are some of the problems that can create problems with our gut and our digestion that can create health problems, and kind of connecting the dots here and how this may be addressed in a health coaching session, or just to give you some ideas of what might be the source of some of the digestive issues that you have, or even if you're not noticing a digestive issue, but just resistant weight gain, because a lot of that can also be attributed to our gut. So just a little background to give you some stats. Irritable bowel syndrome accounts for 12% of all doctor visits and may be the second leading cause of missed work days. So digestive issues are huge, such a big problem. 60% of American adults experience gastrointestinal reflux disease, GERD, within a year time period. With Nexium, a prescription acid-suppressing drug, generating $6.3 billion in sales, and that was in 2010. Now, very likely, our ancestors did not experience these problems with heartburn, irritable bowel, and they were not popping antacids like many of us do. Gut issues are more and more of a problem, and I feel like, and this is totally my opinion, but I feel like allergies and autoimmune disorders, which I know have been on the rise, are so much more prevalent now. And I'm seeing really this connection to our gut and what's going on with our microbiome. However, current research actually does suggest there is a connection between our gut health and diabetes, obesity, rheumatoid arthritis, and other autoimmune disorders. Even autism spectrum disorders are connected in some way to gut health. And then we have some of the mental health issues like depression and anxiety and other illnesses affecting our body and ability to function, like chronic fatigue. So there are some far-reaching consequences. This isn't only about weight gain and obesity, which definitely is impacted by difficulties with digestion and problems with our microbiome. So you might have heard this, but the gut is actually referred to as our second brain. It has its own nervous system and houses approximately 80% of our immune system. So the health of our gut has far-reaching consequences on our whole nervous system, right? Which your nervous system creates everything that you do, the way you think, the way your body responds to your environment, your energy, your emotions, and then also your immune system, how well you're able to fight off diseases, or how well your body is just able to cope with the environment and things that you come across on a day-to-day basis. So there's two major things that I want to talk about when it comes to your gut health. And when we're talking about gut, what the heck are we talking about? We're talking about the microbiota, which is just the cells that make up your gut flora. So that's the cells in your gut, right? If you just think about your digestive tract. And then you have the gut wall, which is your intestinal barrier. Now, your gut is made up of hundreds and trillions of bacteria, fungi, and viruses, believe it or not, and they have a very dynamic relationship with your intestine. There are more than 1,000 different species that, when in equilibrium, when in good balance, allows your body to function normally. So all of this, this organ, is called your microbiome. So some people say we're actually less human than bacteria, because there are probably about, this is what I'm reading, 10 times more microbes in the human body than there are actual human cells. And those microbes are super duper important in how they affect our body. And there are 100 times more genes, genetics, not genes that you wear, in these microbes than there are in our own human genome. So what we're finding is that these microbes are really crucial to our health in every way. And how our gut communicates and functions with our whole body. So in order to run properly, the good bacteria need to outnumber the bad bacteria. And the good bacteria help your body to extract nutrients from the food that you eat and regulate your metabolism. They educate your immune system and they maintain the integrity of the gut lining and defend against pathogens that may enter your body. And we have pathogens entering our body all the time. Your gut also has a direct connection to your brain. And feedback to and from the gut and the brain will affect our thoughts, our mood, and our ability to think clearly, to have good memory, all of that. So when you're microbiota is out of balance, you can get sick. And this can affect things like digestion, metabolism, your thoughts, your mood, again, how well you can think, your immune system. And it also affects the integrity of the intestinal wall. So changes in your gut microbiome is actually linked to many, many diseases, ranging from autism and depression to autoimmune disorders, inflammatory bowel, and type 2 diabetes, all kinds of problems. So problems also with your gut can create the perfect storm for obesity, metabolic disorder, all kinds of autoimmune diseases, type 2 diabetes, brain changes, all of that. So as you can see, it's pretty complicated in there, and it's super important that we have really good balance in our gut bacteria. So what gut dysbiosis is, and this is something that happens in individuals, is an imbalance in the good and the bad bacteria. And that imbalance can cause problems with our health. The gut can also affect how our genetics are expressed. Because like I said before, there are a lot more bacterial genes than there are our own genetics. And the overall health of your microbiome actually potentially has a bigger effect on your health than your own genetics that you've been born with. And this may be part of the link of why our environment can be more impactful than the DNA that we've been born with. Now, everybody has a different microbiome. It's almost like a fingerprint. Your gut is colonized starting in the womb, and even the method of delivery and how you were born can influence the different bacterial cells that you have and how your, you know, your microbiome develops, and also impacting how your immune system develops and all those far-reaching consequences from that. So actually, it's really interesting. Some studies indicate that babies born by C-section are at a greater risk for things like asthma, obesity, type 1 diabetes later in life. And babies that are formula fed have a very different microbiome than babies that were breastfed. So it's really interesting how some of the trends in healthcare may be affecting the gut microbiome of babies that are being born, and maybe if have affected you, right? We've all had different circumstances being born and raised. So diet also has a major influence, obviously, on the levels of beneficial bacteria that line our gut walls. So the types of proteins, fats, carbohydrates, and fiber that you're eating has a major effect. Also, stress, certain medicines, past and current infections will impact your microbiome. What you eat and how you sleep and the medicines you take, the environment in which you live and how you live your life all affect your immune response and how this affects risk for certain diseases. Even low levels of inflammation from your diet, if you're eating something that's inflammatory to you, can affect hormone production and lead to issues with your brain, autoimmune responses, obesity, metabolic disorder. There's actually a really cool bacteria called Akkermansia mucinophila. It's one gut bacteria that is highly beneficial, and being deficient in it can actually put you at a higher risk for developing obesity and type 1 diabetes. And this bacteria, just for example, is fed or created, or if you think about it as soil, right? So if you give that soil the right nutrients, it will develop the nutrients, or will develop more of the thing that you're feeding, right? So if you're feeding the right food to this bacteria, they flourish. If you don't feed them the food that they need, they will decline. So when you eat high sugar, highly processed foods, you're feeding the gut bacteria that thrive on those particular nutrients, and some of the other ones can die off or decline. Gut bacteria are also intimately related to other hormones in your body that affect mood. 90% of your body's serotonin, a hormone that influences your mood, sleep, appetite, is produced and stored in the gut. So if your gut health is compromised, the normal everyday stressors can cause an enhanced response to that stress. Strengthening your gut microbiome, on the other hand, by following gut healthy regimens, will improve your stress tolerance and resilience, your brain function, and your immune response and overall health. On the other hand, when your good gut bacteria are outnumbered by your bad bacteria, this affects every aspect of our bodily functioning. So if you imagine the gut as one very long tube that covers all aspects of digestion starting at your mouth, the food is broken down into smaller pieces at each step in order for your body to extract the nutrients it needs for the body to grow and function. So now I'm going to talk about kind of some of the functions of your gut. So the metabolic function of your gut is that bacteria break down the food we ingest into smaller absorbable particles. They make vitamins like biotin, folate, vitamin K, and convert carbohydrates into non-digestible short-chain fatty acids, which are beneficial to the gut lining, and they help with the absorption of certain minerals like calcium, magnesium, and iron. And I'm going to go into a little later in this, what are some of the problems that you can actually run into all along the line? And I'm going to talk about it kind of briefly, but we'll get into that as well. So then the intestinal wall, the function of the intestinal wall is really made maintained by the bacteria and little microvilli that allow for absorption of these microscopic nutrients that are broken down when we eat. And they contain enzymes that are needed to even break down the food particles into smaller particles so that we could either store it, absorb it, or get rid of it. And the metabolic activity in the gut breaks down these food particles into compounds that might otherwise be harmful to us. They allow for the creation, like I said before, of vitamins and convert those non-digestible carbohydrates into the short-chain fatty acids, which provide energy and benefit the gut lining. So the mucosa lining of the gut is the primary way that your body prevents pathogens, viruses, bad bacteria from being absorbed into your blood supply. And that gut wall is kind of like a cheesecloth, and it's very selective normally about what it allows entering the body. When we're constantly exposed to viruses and bacteria throughout the day, the immune system within the gut is a critical way to prevent infections. So leaky gut is actually one of the problems that we're hearing a lot these days, and one of the problems that we're facing and realizing that we're facing. Researchers have actually identified zonulin, a protein that increases the permeability of the gut intestinal wall. And this protein is identifiable, is higher, I should say, in issues such as autoimmune disorders, such as multiple sclerosis, rheumatoid arthritis, IBS, and type 1 diabetes. So if leaky gut is potentially the cause of some of these autoimmune disorders, what's causing this leaky gut problem that seems to be such a big issue? So leaky gut actually refers to little tears in the gut wall. So what happens is the particles that wouldn't ordinarily be absorbed into our body get absorbed into the body. And this creates an immune reaction. And over time, this kind of chronic low-level inflammation and chronic immune reaction causes people to develop sometimes an autoimmune disorder. So then your body's just, when it's exposed to that specific particle, mounts this big inflammatory reaction. Now, normally inflammation, right, when it's not chronic or low level all the time chronic, it's good because it stops us from getting sick. But when it's happening all the time and then it becomes, you know, this thing that's really degrading your body, it's causing all kinds of problems. So some symptoms of leaky gut could be, I mean, these are far-reaching symptoms: skin rashes, anxiety, depression, fatigue, joint pain, acne, allergies, gas and bloating, asthma, poor cognitive functioning, like memory problems, difficulty concentrating. All of these can be symptoms of leaky gut. So they're really far-reaching and they're kind of vague, right? Because we can sometimes have these symptoms. A lot of people may have these symptoms, right? So, you know, it kind of is a little bit of a puzzle sometimes to put together if this is maybe underlying all of it. So as I said before, these little particles, when you have a leaky gut, kind of slip through the torn cheesecloth gut lining, and the body mounts an attack on these. And these little particles are seen by your immune system as a foreign invader. So because we said before, 70 to 80% of the immune system actually resides in the gut, it acts to keep the invaders out. But when something is tagged as an invader, your immune system remembers these things. And so the next time it's exposed to that thing, it mounts an even more effective attack, right? Our immune system has a memory. That's why vaccines work, right? It's like, oh, yep, that's right. That thing, that bad thing is back. I'm going to mount an immune response to effectively take care of it before it causes a real big problem. So people who feel bad after eating certain foods will also assume they need to take antacids to make them feel better. Now, there is the case for this, and some people might have too much acid in their stomach, but this isn't always the case, and this is what we're finding. The reduction in acid inside the stomach sometimes can actually hinder the digestive process and worsen the gut's digestive process, right? If you don't have enough acid in your stomach, then you're going to have a hard time breaking certain foods down. So the actual causes of leaky gut and what they're finding is diet. So standard American diet, SAD, SAD, is one of the big problems. Stress, cortisol, the stress hormone, impacts our ability to digest foods properly, infections, alcohol consumption, while there have been some studies that promote alcohol, like red wine, as being good, it overall is not good for our gut microbiome, certain medications, and environmental toxins. So one of the things that I want to talk about, because this comes up a lot and it's sort of one of those trendy things out there that I was pretty skeptical about, which is gluten. And I've done quite a bit of research and experimenting on myself on this. So there's a couple of things I want to talk about here. In the process of digesting grains, especially refined grains, the body breaks down the compounds into opiate-like compounds, which trigger a morphine-like response in the brain, which is one of the reasons why we love some of these types of foods. And they're quite addictive, right? So we want more and more of them. Over time, this actually leads to, like anything, if we continue to eat something, our body gets used to it and it creates this opiate-like resistance. And that can be one of the reasons why we get addicted to certain foods. Since there are no enzymes in the body to fully break down gluten proteins in some of these grains like wheat, rye, and barley, they can create inflammation and permeability. And they're finding that this probably happens in everyone. And when the gluten molecules migrate through the gut wall, the body tags them as invaders and it mounts an immune response. So fatigue, headache, anxiety, foggy brain, even arm and leg numbness are signs that gluten sensitivity is impacting the brain. gluten issues can actually cause problems with absorbing other nutrients in the body. So can cause some problems with production of certain amino acids, which are critical for neurotransmitter production. And so there are some links here to neurological degenerative disorders, things like Parkinson's, schizophrenia, fibromyalgia, depression. So there are some issues as well with that. So there are a lot of strategies as far as promoting gut health, and a lot of it is really knowing what's irritating your stomach, your microbiome, what's causing the problem, and maintaining good gut health. So there are all of those, awesome strategies, gut healthy, diet plans and that sort of thing. I want to take it a step further in this discussion because I don't think it's the complete picture. So there are a few other things that are impacting whether or not we're digesting properly. One of the things that we didn't really talk about was your gallbladder. And the gallbladder is particularly important because it aids in the digestion of lipids. And a lot of people have issues with a sluggish gallbladder, which can impair our ability to absorb fat-soluble vitamins, and those are necessary for hormone production. So if you're, a perimenopausal woman, or even, anyone really, because we all have hormones, but when your hormone's a little more sensitive and you're not getting the fat nutrients that you need absorbed into your body, fat is used for not only hormone production, but, creation of the lipid structure of your cells. So it's pretty darn important to have a healthy gallbladder and be able to absorb fat-soluble vitamins and create hormones. The other issue I kind of alluded to before was stomach acids. And yes, some people can have too much acid in their stomach, but they're actually finding more people do not have enough stomach acid. So what happens when you put food in your mouth and you're chewing? So chewing is the first thing to think about when you're digesting, right? Because if you're just chewing something a couple of times, maybe two, three times, even just four times, and then you're swallowing because you're in a hurry, you're number one, you're not starting the digestive process enough in your mouth. So really chewing is the first thing to think about and really slowing down and eating, because that also chewing stimulates the bile release from your gallbladder, which releases, digestive juices that start that process in your stomach, right? So digestion starts in the mouth, then goes to your stomach. So the intestine is super important with the microbiome, but you also have to think about what's going on in my stomach. Do I have the acid production that I need? Some people with low acid production should really think about not drinking a ton of liquid or water with their meal, because that reduces the acidity of the stomach in breaking food down. So that's also something to think about. And then we talked about what happens after that, right? So your stomach, your gallbladder is kind of breaking things down into your intestines. Then all of those food particles are then broken down some more. Another thing that's impacting that process, the whole process, is cortisol levels and stress and how we're feeling when we're eating. And if our body is in full-fledged stress mode, it shuts down your digestive processes, and that's just survival, right? So whenever we're really stressed, and we may not even know that we're stressed in that moment in time, we've gotten very accustomed and out of touch with what stress feels like in our body. But even just being stressed out when you're eating can be shutting down that whole process. So that's impacting your gut microbiome. It's impacting how well you're digesting your food. So you may feel like crap if you're eating something and you're not digesting it properly. So that's another important aspect of things. So also vegetables. Now, I'm a huge promoter of vegetables. However, if you're having gut microbiome issues, there vegetables may be really harsh, and there are certain vegetables that may be more harsh than others, and those are the insoluble fiber vegetables. Those can be have a lot of roughage in them, and for some people that can be really irritating, especially if you are dealing with some kind of a microbiome dysbiosis or if you have IBS. So those things can be a big issue. And that also leads me to talk a little bit about FODMAP, because this, I think, becomes or can be the result of the whole microbiome being off. What happens with FODMAPs is that certain sugars will cause intestinal distress. And this is common in people with IBS and SIBO. So what is usually recommended is a temporary restriction in the foods that are high FODMAP. And I'll talk about what that is. And then it's kind of like the elimination diet, right? You cut it out temporarily and then you start adding things back slowly and you kind of see like what you tolerate and what you don't tolerate. It's kind of like a self-experiment. So FODMAPs are fermentable oligosaccharides, if I said that correctly, disaccharides, monosaccharides, and polyols. And what they are short-chain sugars that the intestine has a hard time absorbing. And that can lead to things like bloating, cramping, gas, even diarrhea. So again, the process for dealing with this issue, if you have a hard time with high FODMAP foods, is to stop eating them temporarily and kind of add them back in slowly. So some of the foods, just to give you an idea of what this is, some of the high FODMAP foods are things like dairy milk, yogurt, and ice cream, wheat products, beans and lentils tend to be a problem, and some vegetables. Top on the vegetables are artichoke, asparagus, onion, garlic can cause some problems. And these are all, if you think about it, like these are all really gut healthy things, right? So it kind of goes against what you think you need if you're going on a gut health program. So I always like to say, number one, if you have any of these issues, you should certainly get medical advice. And make sure, you know, there isn't anything else going on. So you should always follow up with your doctor or primary care provider and make sure that there's nothing else going on. Assuming that everything is fine, you're just having some digestive issues, you know, these are things to think about and consider. And then fruits, apples, cherries, pears, and peaches tend to be the high FODMAP foods. There's whole protocols that go with this. And basically, again, you're, you know, eating low FODMAP and then sort of reintroducing foods slowly. Okay. So we talked about digestion from the mouth all the way down. We talked about what leaky gut is. And I'm going to give you some tips now on how to improve digestion. So these are just some general things to kind of give you some ideas that you can start implementing. Of course, if we were working together in a coaching program, this would be more specific and we would be really working on how to implement all of this into your life. One of the things that's super important is hydration. We all know it. We need to be hydrated. Some of us are better at drinking enough water. Some of us not so good. But it's super important because that does actually thin the bile. So it will help with any gallbladder issues. And we do know that gallbladder issues can cause digestive issues, poor absorption of nutrients that are super important for us. Water also helps us detoxify, and as a woman, this is something we need to be really good about detoxifying, because otherwise we can end up with some hormonal imbalances or estrogen dominance, and that can contribute to diseases and illnesses. Also, if you're dehydrated, your heart's having to work so much harder. Like, it's just, nothing in your body runs as well as it's supposed to. So just make sure you're drinking enough water. You should be drinking half your body weight in ounces per pound a day. So if you're a 200 pound person, you should be shooting for 100 ounces of purified water a day. Eating healthy fats is essential. Being able to digest them is important. So that's why, you know, supporting good bile production and gallbladder function is really important. Losing weight. So weight gain or obesity is a risk factor for all kinds of problems. It also is a risk factor for gallbladder problems. So really slow, steady weight loss, dropping a bunch of weight really quick can actually be very stressful on your body and can cause gallstones, increased rate of gallstones for people. Usually improving stomach acid. Again, some people do have reflux because of too much acid or problems associated with that. But if you do not have too much acid in your stomach, you want to make sure you've got enough acid in your stomach to digest. So that means avoiding super hydration during meals. Some of the other things that you can do is squeezing some lemon on the food that you're eating. Like if you're eating grilled chicken breast, putting some fresh lemon on there. Apple cider vinegar is another good one. That's really good for you, especially if it's naturally fermented apple cider vinegar. Really important, something that we don't think about, is just relaxing with eating. And a lot of times, one of the things that I work with on my clients is just breathing slowly and making it intentional to relax while eating. Bitter foods are really good. They help with digestion. So, you know, having a little parsley with your dinner, ginger is a good herb, or it's not really an herb, but ginger is good. Cilantro, arugula, dandelion, all of those nice bitter foods help with digestion. So that could be really helpful in improving your ability to digest, feel better when you're eating, and then absorb nutrients. So if you tolerate them, fermented veggies like sauerkraut, and it's really the natural fermented process. So you have to look at the package when you buy them. Kimchi and even naturally fermented pickles. So things like that are really good. Again, chewing your food and really being intentional and slowing down when you eat can help. Chlorophyll is good for bile secretion. So having leafy greens with your meal can really help with that as well. And another thing to think about is magnesium deficiency, because that can reduce the ability for our intestines and our digestive tract to contract properly. And if you're not getting good contraction, things aren't moving through the way they're supposed to. I don't know the actual number, I forget, but a majority of adults in the US are magnesium or have a deficiency in magnesium. So definitely something to think about. That's one of my supplements that I have every night for that reason, for other reasons, because magnesium is really needed for your body's ability to relax as well. It does a lot of things. And if it's a deficiency that you have, it can be affecting, you know, your motility and your digestive tract and other things. So something to look into. All right, guys, this was a long one today, but it's an important one. It's really important to think about how to support your gut health. There are so many other things that we could talk about when it comes to gut health. Oh, one last thing I do want to say about all of this. Fasting has become a buzzword. Not a buzzword. It is. Fasting is awesome. It's just, you kind of have to know, number one, what's going on with your body and, you know, your stress levels, your hormonal status, and your digestive status. So fasting could be a problem for people who have gut health issues. So just be a little careful when you're trying to do some weight loss and you have a protocol that's making you fast for really long periods of time. Number one, for most women in childbearing years, a lot of extended fasting isn't necessarily good or beneficial. If you are kind of in this SOS, I like to call it SOS because that's how I've been, that's how I've learned it. But if your body's in this like chronic overstressed state, fasting can sometimes be seen as a stressor and it can backfire on your weight loss goals. So just some things to think about. Sometimes fasting isn't always the best answer right away. You really want to support your gut health first, reduce, you know, the cortisol levels or get them better balanced in your body first. So anyway, if you want help with this, if you really want to like have a conversation with me, you can email me at support@getbetterwithheather.com. We could set up a consultation and kind of talk about what's going on with you. And, you know, it is a free consultation. It's just kind of an introduction to kind of talk about if I, you know, if my program is a fit for you, but you'll get some awareness. And I always give people some suggestions. So if you have, you know, anything that you're unsure about and you're wondering, go ahead and reach out. I am always happy to help. So hope you all have an awesome day and I will see you or talk to you next week. I am so excited to announce that I will be rolling out the Better Body Formula, which is an online health coaching program to help my lady friends like me in midlife struggling to lose weight and feel good in their bodies. It is a step-by-step approach with coaching as part of the program and something that you can do at your own pace. So you could say goodbye to dieting and finally have an easy-to-follow formula, a formula that has taken years for me to develop because, yes, I was the guinea pig. I was the one going through all of these ups and downs and making all of these mistakes. But I've packaged all of those mistakes and all of the things that I've learned from my two certifications in health coaching, from all my knowledge about the human body, about the human brain, and about the life of a woman in midlife, a busy mom, a career woman, and how to implement the best program to finally take charge of your body, enhance energy, and learn how to listen to your body so that you're not having to go to experts and you're not having to go to books and people telling you, you know, totally different things. This is one program where you get to decide what is the best method for you and learn how to identify your unique roadblocks, the things that get in your way. I spent a lot of time self-sabotaging my weight loss efforts, and some of those were limiting beliefs that I had, and other reasons were totally physiological things that I didn't understand. If you want to get on the wait list, go ahead and click the link that's in the show notes. It is going to be an awesome program, self-paced. Like I said, it's going to have some coaching component to it, so I will be helping you throughout the way and helping you create awesome confidence that impacts your life in every way. To get on the wait list for the Better Body Formula, go to land.getbetterwithheather.com/betterbody. This is the wait list that I will use to send out email updates so that you are the first to know about this program when it becomes available. And I guarantee that there are going to be some awesome bonuses to the first few members of this program. So go ahead, sign up. All you have to do is put your email address in and I will send you those updates.